The Loose Cannons Podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at ya. Today we're going to be discussing a recent movie. It's called Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1. Perhaps you've heard of it. Directed by Francis Lawrence, starring Jennifer Lawrence, no relation.
I'm still confused about that podcast. I'm still wondering if there maybe is.
We're not very funny people, so we have to use the same jokes over and over again.
I like it.
Did
meaning a quesadilla.
Anyone see anything that they loved or hated since our last podcast? Love, hate, love. I think Basil did.
I sure did. What about? Let's go in order, though. What about you, Patrick?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I've seen anything that I love.
If only we knew this was a segment before the podcast started.
I know. I'm trying to think about what I've watched. No, I don't think I've seen anything that I loved. No, wait, I did. I take that back. I did see something that I loved. Should I discuss it now, though, if we're going to discuss it on the year-end podcast?
Up to you.
No,
I'm gonna save that one. I'm gonna hold back.
Pocket it,
because that's a 2014 movie. I'm gonna hold back.
Speaking of which, I think I'm actually inching close to the number to enough having watched enough movies in 2014 to do an end of year podcast.
Yes.
So. I don't know if you already got someone who's supposed to replace me.
Fuck that guy.
Just kick him out.
Okay.
Kick him right out. Anyway, this just to say, anyway.
Have you not been logging stuff on Letterboxd? Because when I last checked, it looked like you'd seen 8 movies.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I haven't been logging anything.
Okay, because I was like, man, you must have watched a lot of stuff since the last time I checked your Letterboxd, because when I saw it, I was like, oh, he's only seen like 8 movies from this year.
No, I think I've watched like 20 now.
Yeah, I would forget all of the movies that I saw.
Only one a day left.
20 or 30.
For the...
From this year, I think that's fine.
No, I meant like...
Not everyone could be like you, Basil.
I just meant to get to 50, you'd only have to watch one a day for the rest of the year.
Right. I might get there.
Basil.
Anyway.
So...
He did.
Did you watch anything?
I did. I watched one thing that I really, really, really liked that I will not talk about until the end of the year. So, boom. Take that.
Bam.
And then I also rewatched Gremlins, which I really liked a lot. But it's harder for me to say that I really loved just because the last time I watched it, it was like a, you know, top 20 of all time movie. And this time when I watched it, I liked it less than that. But I still liked it. A lot. There's a lot that...
You mean...
Yeah.
You mean Gremlins?
Yeah, that is what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of broke up a bit.
Sorry.
Sure, it'll be fine on the podcast.
It sounded like...
Thank you, Patrick.
Good times. Gremlins.
So now the podcast audience knows what it sounded like to us.
Yeah.
That's realism.
Keeping
it...
This is what people want to listen to.
Yeah, to hear imitation grumbling sounds.
Yeah.
I don't even...
Got to give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Got to get more digital artifacts
on
the podcast.
I watched... Jesus. I watched Salt of the Earth by Wim Wenders, which was surprisingly affecting. Even though I'm not sure that I liked it, I thought it was some of the most beautiful photography I'd seen in the cinema in forever, and that's probably due to Salgado, the Brazilian photographer, just being an amazing photographer, and seeing that in the cinema was really overwhelming. I actually thought that the movie could have been better if they just focused on his photography for longer, instead of just shifting between the different photographs as fast as they did. But then again, it is a movie, so it's not just one photograph for 5 minutes and then the next photograph is supposed to move.
It's not like a Ken Burns movie.
I don't know. It was a weird kind of experiment, and it had like not that much Wenders to it, but it was definitely very impressive visually. Like, it's one of the most visually impressive movies I've seen all year.
Yay.
So, yeah, if you're into that.
I was saying your name, but I was yelling at Patrick, by the way.
Because
Patrick wouldn't shut up.
Oh, that, I totally
that
got that.
That's generally the problem with me.
Don't you worry.
I didn't watch any movies since last time, really, because I've been working on this project. I don't know when this podcast is going to be released, if we're going to bump it up because it's a recent movie, or if we're going to just release it on schedule, but either way, the project that I've been working on, I essentially did the rough draft today. Hopefully I'll have a final draft by sometime next week, and we'll probably be adding it to our website for you guys to watch.
Yay!
Awesome.
I'm very excited.
This was my pick, so I guess I will describe the plot. So this is the third movie in the Hunger Games series. It's our last movie ended with Katniss being saved from the 75th annual games, and along with Finnick and a couple other people, but PETA and Joanna and were taken, and Annie, who was Finnick's love, was taken from their district as a punishment for Finnick. That's where the movie begins, and she's in District 13, which people thought had been destroyed for a long time, because that's what the Capitol said was like the propaganda, but turns out exists. And there, Julianne Moore is the president of District 13, and along with Philip Seymour Hoffman's Plutarch character, are kind of trying to create the war to fight against the Capitol, and they think that Katniss, Jennifer Lawrence's character, is a key piece in like encouraging people to fight against the Capitol, like a key piece of propaganda. And most of the movie is either sort of her dealing with the post-games stuff and what's happened, including the entire destruction of her district, and being either convinced to be what they call the Mockingjay, which is the propaganda person. Patrick, you're first up. Can you wait? Like, no, okay. I guess we'll skip Patrick and go to him last.
Perfect timing.
scenes of her being like the Mockingjay doing propaganda for them is pretty much what most of the movie is. Basil, what did you think of it?
I actually liked it a lot. I was surprised that to be the case. In preparation for the movie, I went back and watched both of the preceding films, and both of them I liked more than the time that I saw them. I no longer hated the first Hunger Games, and I mildly liked Catching Fire rather than mildly disliking it. And so then this one I went into and liked it a lot, and I was surprised that that was the case. What was I going to say? It seems like the farther I get away from having read the source material, the easier it is for me to enjoy the movies. So, there's that. What about you, Ilya?
I like this movie. I was very happy about having watched it, and I just recently started actually reading the books. I'm halfway into Catching Fire, and I'm enjoying the books a lot, and I'm enjoying what the cumulative experience of reading the books and watching the movies is doing, which I think that's something that Ruben actually mentioned in the podcast about Catching Fire, which is that together those things, reading the books and watching the movies, gives like a really good picture of it. But like, yeah, I thought this movie was really, really well done and very, like, took its time to make its points and get its points across. All the stuff it had to say about propaganda and just the way that images can be manipulated, I thought was really impressive, and was, I kind of enjoyed the fact that pretty much everyone in the theater with me was like going like, what? Where, like, where are the fight scenes? Where's the big battle scene? What's happening? And me and my brother were just sitting there and we're like, this is kind of awesome. Like, you people have no idea. This is really, really good. And I was really happy that they took the time with the storytelling and the kind of claustrophobic atmosphere of 13. I thought they put that across really well. So I like
this. Patrick?
I love this movie. I thought...
Print it.
Yeah, I thought, I agree with a lot of what Ilya says, and it's interesting he talked about it being claustrophobic. Like, for a lot of the more dramatic scenes, I felt like I was underwater. Like, that's how I was, like, I was, like, hard to draw breath, because I was so into what was going on, and it was just, like, super intense. And I really enjoyed it not having a lot of battle sequences. Like, battle was sort of tertiary to what was going on. Like, you were really getting some good solid character, you know, meat in this movie, as opposed to like just a bunch of, you know, special effects and stuff like that. Like, that's what I really loved about this movie.
I like this movie, but I didn't like it as much as the first two, actually. And for the
controversial,
yeah, for the first time, I actually felt not how Ilya mentioned I felt about the other ones, where it just added to my experience. And this one, I started to compare and contrast with my memory of the book, and it left it a bit wanting. I think part of that is that I didn't think the acting was as good in this one as it was in the other ones. That there was a lot of these weird insert shots of, like, people reacting to stuff where they were just like, wah, or whatever. Like, that seemed really out of place, or, like, maybe they weren't shot on set that day or something like that. And the other thing is, we kind of talked about this with... I kind of talked about this with Basil off-podcast, is that I think more clearly than in any of the other ones... they've made Katniss into a hero in this one, and she's a lot more complicated, darker character in the books. And that made me a bit sad about this one.
It's interesting. I started to read the first book, so I kind of get what you're talking about Katniss being... more complicated. I was also talking to a friend of mine who's very familiar with the books, and she said that Katniss basically doesn't love anybody but her sister. Like, that's the only person that she really loves, and all the other stuff is like her, you know, just playing a role. But I thought that this movie did a really good job of sort of bringing that to the fore, like the idea of playing a role.
Yeah, I agree, and that's my favorite parts of the movie, is like that it talks about like war being like specifically like a game, and it being like a media game, and how important it is to get people to, you know, think that it's justifiable, and that like the movie in a way is critiquing itself in its own images for like how it makes you feel by, like, always framing it in the idea of propaganda. Like, I love the idea that my favorite moments in this movie are Jennifer Lawrence is delivering, like, an incredible emotional speech, and then it cuts to the girl from Game of Thrones, and she's like, moving closer with the camera.
I love those moments so much. And I love the fact that those moments actually, not only do they work in the sense that, like, oh, this is making it more obvious in how what they are filming is propaganda, but, like, it also questions the whole movie in a way. Like, the way certain scenes are set up, the way, like, certain emotional payoffs are constructed, all of that is questioned through the movie's, like, referencing the just the constructedness of all the emotions that the movie is producing. So when Jennifer Lawrence is in the hospital and all the kids show up and then they do the salute, the three finger salute, the Mockingjay salute, and then it's supposed to be this stirring scene and the music is being all emotional and everything, and then it cuts to the director girl and she's saying, oh yeah, now just show this, now just show that. I think it really, really undercuts the movie itself, not just the things that are going on in it. And I felt like at no point in the earlier movies did it seem that this franchise was as aware of what it is doing and how it's doing it. And I really like that about this movie.
Yeah. And yeah. I will say I also felt it felt very similar to me from working on film sets. Like, that's what's going on generally, and you don't have time to focus on, like, what the actors are doing or anything. So you're just like, get the shot, you know, like, or get the boom in there closer, get the sound, you know, like, you're focusing on all these little technical issues. And so for me, that was another little, like, bonus of the way that those scenes worked. It was like, I felt, I was like, I totally relate to this. This is nice. What were you going to say, Basil?
Oh, I was just going to say that I agree with what Ilya is saying, that in a way, like, realistically speaking, we should think of this series, at least previous to this, as being sort of like on, if it's a metaphor for what's currently going on in America, it's like on the Capitol side. Like, the people in Hollywood are the 1%. They're like, so it's sort of a weird movie. I mean, I think that the book gets away with it because print is a little bit different, and, you know, and it doesn't cost nearly as much to make a book, but, like, the fact that you're spending $300 million to, like, make a movie that argues that you shouldn't spend so much money, like, that people are wasteful with their money, is pretty amazing, but it's pretty crazy. And so I think that I agree that kind of calling attention to itself and calling itself out as being, in a way, part of the problem is the right step to take if you're gonna make the movie and what it's trying to argue actually work. And so I think that's pretty cool. But I agree with what Ruben said, that the acting was not as good. The part when Jennifer Lawrence is giving that really big emotional speech, I was like, I don't know if I buy this. Like, when she's, like, talking to the camera, it felt like it was all kind of one tone. Like, there was no variation or, like, build in her speech to, like, getting more and more angry. It was like, I am this angry for the entire time. And so it just didn't really resonate with me the way I was expecting it to, especially compared to...
Although I thought...
the book.
Yeah, I thought the first time when she did the speech and she was failing...
Yeah.
I thought that part was
that was
really,
one
really
of my
funny.
Favorite
it
parts
really
in the book. And I was glad that they kept it in, and I think she did a really good job capturing what I thought wasn't going to translate to text into video very well.
And I mean, what I kept thinking throughout that whole time was, like, this could be in movies. Like, that speech that she's giving, that kind of acting is absolutely accepted as, in this way, as, like, motivational, whatever, blah, 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 speech talk. You know, it could have, like, it could have flown. And the fact that the movie actually cuts back and people are like, what? Like, that's not good. I thought it was really, really funny. And that the fact that that came up that early in the movie already kind of brought me like hope that, oh, this is actually going to have a really interesting sense of humor as regards to, like, you know, also like things like authenticity and like how things should be delivered and how real
I think the film's best joke or best point, you might say, is how inauthentic what is honest is in the movie. They're like, you need to get her to say something authentically, and they send her to like these situations and they film her and then they like edit it together. It's like, that's not real. that's not a real thing. That actress, by the way, who I liked a lot, is Natalie Dormer, who plays the like director in the film.
I thought she was really, really good. And even though it's a carryover from the book, it really, really annoys me that those two characters are named Castor and Pollux. I really don't like it.
Yeah, it's a pretty on the nose. I mean, what it reminded me of was Face Off, where the character that Nicolas Cage plays for most of the movie and the guy, like his brother that's in prison. they're both named Castor and Pollux Troy. It's like, oh brother. But there it's kind of like high melodrama. Here it's just like an eye rolling reference.
I wouldn't mind
this movie referencing Face Off at all. That would have been pretty funny.
No, they're obviously referencing, you know, classical Greek
mythology.
But it feels out of place considering everyone else sort of has their own names that just like fit within this weird universe, so to have like a names that are very obviously referencing something
except
else.
For Joanna.
Yeah, except Joanna still.
Joanna and Annie.
Still the one boring name in the whole universe of the Hunger Games.
It was like she had already named like 45 characters at that point, and she was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Joanna and Annie.
I started rereading the first book, and I was amazed to find out that, like, Joanna Newsom's actually referenced really early in the first book, and then comes up later. And I was like, hey, I didn't remember this, because it's only for, like, one
Her
paragraph.
Her name is Newsom?
But...
No, it's Mason.
Mason, sorry, I'm thinking of the singer.
Yeah, the singer is Newsom.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was her last name. She's named after a singer.
Yeah. Speaking of singing... I really like Jennifer Lawrence's singing in this movie a lot.
Apparently,
I thought it was funny because in the books, Katniss refers to her like her dad was a great singer, and she's really self-conscious about her own singing, which kind of neatly parallels the fact that Jennifer Lawrence is apparently really equally as self-conscious, or even more so, of her own singing, because that scene probably took hours to film, and she was really, really begging to not have to sing this song. But I thought, by the moment when it played in the movie, I was really affected by it, and I thought one of the main things, I kept thinking about the fact that, yeah, well, Katniss hates her own voice, and yet she's kind of like, whatever, she's just, at this point, kind of doesn't care. And I felt that translated really well with J Law's kind of untrained but sort of country bluegrass whatever voice. I felt that carried pretty well. I was really affected by it in a way that I didn't expect to, and it was one of my favorite moments in the movie. Actually, the Hanging Tree is the song name.
Yeah, and that's a hit now. Actually, it's on the charts.
Yeah, apparently. It's like top 20 in the UK, which is really funny.
Can't wait for it to be on Who Charted.
So Jennifer.
Chart exclusive.
Along with that Cups song, the sequel to the Cups song. Pitch Perfect 2.
You guys did not like that song?
I thought it was okay. I don't know. I think it would be more affecting for me if that whole subplot hadn't been dropped completely from the books. Like, I mean, from the book to movie translation, there's no hint anywhere early on in the movie I mean, her dad as a character is completely non-existent, which is understandable because it would involve a lot of flashbacks or whatever, but
right.
That this whole idea of singing being like a part of their both cultural heritage and like personal history is not mentioned at all in the movie, so when it comes up, it doesn't have the same, I don't know, like meaning as it does, as it would in the books, because you know, it's never been referenced before. But I thought it worked well enough.
It's a dark song used for a dark moment, though. Like when I don't know, when I think of people singing over stuff, my go-to touchstone is the scene in Raising Arizona when she's singing to the baby, and she's basically singing a very similar song about someone getting hung.
Yeah, down in the Willow Garden.
Yeah, it's a great song, and she's singing it to a little baby, and I always think, like, how sweet the scene is and how creepy the song is, and I guess this was a little on the nose for me. It would have been...
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
It would have been more interesting, actually, if it was, like, a really sweet song. That wouldn't have made sense for her
character. I guess it... In a way, it makes sense because the way that Katniss, everything that Katniss does is used as propaganda for something bigger, way bigger than her. And this actually ties into something else that I really liked about the movie. So when she's singing the song, they're showing some of the uprisings happening. And every time you see an uprising start to happen, the first thing you see is people getting gunned down by like dozens and dozens, and by the time the uprising maybe is even effective, the effect it had on me is that, well, all these like hundreds of people have died for not really clear if it even was anything, and Katniss is absolutely remote from that, and the fact that the movie really like concentrates on like it, I don't think I've actually seen a movie where it shows rebellion in a way that it shows, first of all the stuff that goes wrong in a really brutal way, and then the victory of it is like cut kind of short. It's shown really briefly, and then it like cuts away from that. And I felt like the way that Katniss, I mean, her image is being manipulated and used and all of that, and the same way her voice is used in that case, to and even the soundtrack, like, undercuts of it, like they add this chorus to it and make this like huge,
and they change one
of
the words from
already
rope
makes
to
it
hope.
Like,
yeah,
right.
Even though it makes
I thought that was,
And I
thought that was furthering the movie's point about the manipulation of the information,
of
and that's I liked that. I liked that they continued that even with the song. They were like, oh well, we just had to change some stuff. it seems like such a, you know, it's such a like PR move.
Yes.
Like, oh, well, we had to, you know, people don't really listen to the rest of the
they
lyrics,
have their,
but that was kind of on the nose.
Sort of what you were saying based on that, Ilya, is, one of the things that did impress me a lot about this movie is that I've been complaining a lot about other sort of big movies that have, like, lots of fighting and stuff, like the fact that people don't really die in it, that you can't really feel the stakes. Like, this movie gets realer than real. Like, it's a movie that starts off with, you know, like, two or three on-screen deaths in, like, the first one or whatever, and almost, like, nobody in the second one, again, just, like, two or three, and then one of the first images in this movie is Jennifer Lawrence walking on a hill full of skulls, and I was like, well, I guess they're not going to sugarcoat what war does in this movie. You don't really get that in, like, the Avengers movies or something like that. Someone dies, they're either a bad guy or they're going to come back later. You don't just, like, get the huge civilian cost. It's and that's part of why I really dislike those movies, is that there's nothing honest or real about what's at stake.
I was going to say, going off that, I thought those scenes that Ilya talked about were really good, and probably the first time in the series that I felt like stuff that was added for the movie was justified, that it, you know, actually worked in a way that if you cut it, the movie wouldn't be that different. Like, all the scenes with Donald Sutherland and other things in the first two movies, whenever they show stuff that was clearly written just for the movie, since the books are all from Katniss's point of view, I always felt like they were just sort of wasteful and unneeded and really annoying. But all those scenes, even though I was really nervous about the idea that they would be pulling back and showing what the revolution actually looks like, when they did it, they really nailed it compared to, like, you know, I don't know, Lord of the Rings, where it's like two huge armies just running at each other and cool kills and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, get! I'm 27. I have 48. Yeah, it's, that means that I was wrong, though. After I saw the movie with my brother, I told him that you would be bothered by the fact that there were scenes that didn't involve Katniss. Katniss's perspective.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they were handled worse, it would have bothered me a lot, because it was exactly what I was afraid of. But I felt like both of them, the one with the tree things was really, really impressive and just terrifying, and then the thing with the dam was really harrowing, just watching all those people get mowed down just trying to drag a box into a place was really intense. Yeah. So I felt like it worked in a way that I was not expecting it to. So
yeah, and
good job.
I also think, and this is since we're coming at this from a couple of different angles, I guess Ruben coming at it from, you know, having read all the books and already knowing what happens. Like, I honestly had no idea who was going to live or die in this one. So I was really, like, really nervous during a lot of those scenes. After seeing some of those scenes of just people just getting, you know, mowed down and destroyed in those scenes, I was just like, oh my god, like, now they're putting, you know, main characters and people I care about in danger. Like, I'm racked. Now this is crazy.
So I think that one thing that the books definitely like have over the movies is the relationship that the reader maybe builds up to Ida and his meaning for the whole universe here. Because when the movie starts out and J-Law is crying out for him when she sees him on the screen, and then when she starts talking about how important he is, and basically it gets clear how much she loves him. It's really, I don't feel like the movies have ever given the audience enough reason to like Ida as much or nearly as much as J-Lo or Katniss does in the movies. I feel like the books do a much better job of that. And having read, you know, the first 1.5 books, I was also going like, oh, Ida, he's so awesome. I like that guy a lot. So, yeah, I don't want him to die, especially since I don't know what's going to happen. I was really, really nervous for him. And every time, even though, like, it felt like Katniss would be kind of selfish complaining about Ida, it's also, that's that whole joke. Like, the movies are told, like, they're from her perspective. She doesn't know everything. What she really knows is how much her relationship with Ida, that's, like, one of the most biggest parts of her life over the past year or whatever, and so of course she feels this much for him, and of course she's as worried about him. And even though everyone else around her is thinking about bigger things, she can't help but be worried about him, and that makes sense to me. But it really only makes sense to me having read the books. I'm not sure it would make as much sense to me just having watched the movies, and I feel like that's maybe definitely something that the movie can be accused of.
Part of
not
that's
having, you know,
the casting
developed.
Although I actually thought this was probably Josh Hutcherson's best performance in the three movies so far.
I agree. I agree.
And yeah, it's one of the things that I like most about the books is that Peeta, as many ways, like the most human person in the books, is our pathway to understanding Katniss, even though she's the main character and she's responding to him. It's kind of like you're reading the books and you don't know who Katniss is in a way, and so you have to, like, find out through Peeta, and like the fact that he just, like, sort of loves her unconditionally. And yeah, I mean, I love Peeta. What happens at the end of the movie and halfway through the book, like, pretty much sent me into, like, a deep, dark hole for, like, a long time. I was like, You would think just like a character dying would be like the worst thing, but like to have like his love of Katniss like stripped out of him is like so upsetting to me.
I thought that like last shot that you get of him where he's just like losing it, and they've got him like strapped to the bed, and he's just like, you know, he's all bruised and he's like losing it. I was just like, this is so intense.
Yeah, I thought that was a great ending compared to how Catching Fire ends, because I hate the ending of Catching Fire. But
I don't even remember. Is it just her screaming for Peeta?
No, it's like a weird thing where it's all like a big emotional transition in one shot that doesn't quite work, where it's like a shot of her face and at first she's sad, but then like slowly over the course of like a couple seconds or whatever, not very slowly, she becomes like hardened with resolve, like we're gonna do this or whatever, and then like it cuts to black and it's like, you know, Catching Fire, bum bum bum.
I always thought that movie should have ended like she shoots the arrow, whatever, at the force field, and then she like she blacks out or something like that, and then that's just it. That's the end of the movie. And people are like, wait, what?
That'd be a...
like, whoa!
I agree. Yeah. That would be a pretty.
I love the fact that the ending of Mockingjay was part Mockingjay part one. Whatever, we can talk about that later. Uh-huh. How weird that is, but that the ending of Peeta being stuck to this hospital bed, injected with this venom that has transformed him mentally, and fighting is overlaid with the voice of Julianne Moore's president character, giving this speech of empowerment and how, you know, 13 is going to fight back against the Capitol and they're not going to bring us down and blah blah blah. I felt like some of the most interesting parts of this movie actually had to do with how even District 13, which is ostensibly like, this is like the last bastion of freedom, whatever, the good guys, that they are actually, they are just as manipulative and, like they force themselves and on Katniss and use her for their benefit. Just as much as the Capitol did earlier. And the fact that this movie made this into like a big, big point, I felt, without like laying it on too thick, as in like Julianne Moore has like a dark twinkle in her eye every time she says something or whatever. She seems like a person who is very convinced of what she's doing. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is very also like, in a way, is very like, he's committed and he's trying to make this into something, and he's trying to, you know, fashion her as a president into like a character who like people believe and all that. But still, like all of that, because you have Katniss at the forefront and Peeta somewhere in the background, which are two people who are definitely genuine, if, you know, if nothing else, they're like genuine people. All of this surrounding them seems so fake and artificial and just and manipulative, and I was glad that the movie made District 13 way more, I mean definitely very ambiguous in its intentions, and definitely did not align the audience too much with them as much as it does with maybe Katniss or Peeta's character, you know.
Yeah, I
thought I liked this.
Yeah. I like how the whole sort of goal of rescuing Peeta is basically just a means to an ends for them. Like, it's not like they really care whether or not he lives or dies. Like, they care because it's because they need Katniss, and so they care because she cares. And, you know, as long as she's happy and they can keep using her in propaganda, that's why they're doing it. And so I like that there is that ulterior motive sort of hanging over the whole thing. Like, you know, they almost couldn't care less one way or the other whether or not any of the people that they send in to get him die also. Like, they're just like, well, you know, it was a setback or whatever. It, you know, if it didn't go correctly, like, they could just be like, well... that's a setback, but we've still got, you know, the person that we really need here. And we can always say that we tried or whatever. I just like that's never explicitly said, but you can feel it in every action that they take. And it's so nice to see that, like, crazy gray area with the side that you're supposed to be rooting for in the movie.
Maybe the fact that I had read these books is why I didn't like Black Book as much, because I felt like these books do a better job than that movie of showing how both sides are always awful in war.
Right. That's fair. I was going to ask you what stuff, since you didn't like this one as much as the first two movies, what stuff, stuck out to you as being something you compared to the book and then it didn't hold up as well?
Well, one of the things that took me out of the movie that made me think about the book was, and I feel like it's disrespectful to say this, but I did not like Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance in this after liking him in Catching Fire, and I kind of assume it's because of where he was at his life with the time they were filming this, that things were not going well for him. He was not concentrating on doing filmmaking. I mean, he died during the production, so I don't really blame him. His life is obviously way more important than this film, but he seemed, you know, not into it, which, like I said, understandable, but it still is like something in the film. And it also felt really stretched to me in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know. There were scenes that I remembered in the book like being like kind of quick and hard-hitting, like 3 or 4 pages, which were made into like 15-minute scenes in this. And it didn't have the same pace as the other movies. And maybe it's kind of like the opposite reaction to you, and that the further away that I get from the books, the like more rose-colored maybe that I look at them, or like comparing it to the movie seems like more inevitable as opposed to adding on to it. But it was like, it was also a lot Jennifer Lawrence's performance, and I guess like me fully recognizing how different their idea of Katniss is from the one in the book, not just her race, because it's pretty clear in the book that she's supposed to be like mixed or something, not white. When I said that to my brother, he was like, that ruins the book for me, and I was like, why? Why is that bad?
Racism?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, racism, boy. Is why.
Awkward.
I did like her interactions with her family, though. I thought, especially like them, the fact that they keep bringing up that cat as a joke, like that cat to me is hilarious.
it's less of a joke in the book. It's more like Katniss is like just hates that cat for no reason that we understand. She just hates it, and like, why does she hate that cat?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a reason, it takes up resources.
Yeah, right. But I just love that part where she's in the house after seeing that they like firebombed District 12 and having seen all the bodies in the street, and then she comes into her house and the cat comes into the window. She's like, of course, like the cat survived the fucking firebomb apocalypse. And they bring it back later too when they when she's like giving her demands, and her last demand is, and my sister gets to keep her cat.
I really like that part, because it seems like what's happening there is that she didn't realize her position of power, that she could have made a lot more demands and they would have given in to them, and so she felt like she had to add more demands at the end, ones that they probably weren't even truly bothered by. She was like, and my sister gets to keep the cat, just so that she would continue to make demands. That was a good moment.
Yeah, that delivery is pretty awesome. That made me laugh really hard.
But yeah, speaking of Prim, I guess, sort of, that would be another thing in comparison to the book that this fails, is that Prim and Peeta are my two favorite characters in the books, and they really get the short shrift in the movies, which, you know, I don't know exactly what you would do, but, like, they're the beating heart of the books, and they're pushed off to the side in the movies.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they did a better job this time. bringing Prim into it, but it's still given them pretty huge lack of development she's received so far. It almost seems weird structurally that she would become this important all of a sudden, because she's like super important throughout the series in the books, but
again,
and it's only in this movie that she gets more than like one or two scenes.
Again, casting is important there. I feel like when they cast the original movie that they were like, who cares about this person? She's just her little sister. She's not in the movie very much. She volunteers for her and then they forget about her. But like, no, she has to be really good, because why else is she volunteering for her otherwise? Like, that's...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it was also, like, who can we get at that point? Because the first one didn't have nearly the budget.
Yeah.
And so they were probably like, well, you know, we've got our big hot actress here, you know, and we've got, you know, we've got Woody Harrelson, we've got some big names in here on the main front, we'll just cast whoever we can as supporting players and hope this thing hits. And then
I never think that that's a particularly good excuse, because like, there are lots of good actors and actresses who aren't getting any work who would love to do Hunger Games.
I think it's definitely more a matter of the script also, or the movie deciding, well,
yeah, that's what I think. I think they decided that Prim was not important and they didn't want to give the role to someone who was going to steal the screen from anybody else.
Which definitely, that's like one of the clearest breaks, definitely, from the books, because I think Katniss's character is pretty much defined by her relationship with Prim. That Prim is like the person that she is most afraid of, that anything might ever happen to her. She's the reason why she does the tesserae, which are not even mentioned in the movies, I think, right?
There's a brief reference to it, but you wouldn't understand what they're talking about unless you'd already read
the
tesserae? Books.
What I'm referring to are the boy or girl can have their names entered in more times into the drawing box, and in exchange they get more food, like grain and oil, for their families, because otherwise everyone in the districts is suffering from hunger. And so one way of dealing with that is to have basically increase the chance that you will be taken on the reaping day. And in the books, it's made clear that like Gale has done that a lot of times to save his family from starvation. Katniss has done that, but she has prevented her sister from doing it because it's so important to her that she stay alive. And that is definitely not, that the movie does not really, any of the movies do not really make an effort to show how important Prim really is to
her,
except for
in the book it specifies that Prim is their first year eligible, which means she only has one like ticket or whatever in the thing, compared to the like thousands of other tickets from other people who are older, they get more tickets, and then who have done that tesserae or tesseract or whatever to
tesseract
bring it back to the Avengers.
Oh yeah. But yeah, I thought to kind of totally change the subject a little bit, I also thought that Liam Hemsworth was much better in this than he had been in the previous two movies. I mean, he's given more screen time, which maybe he's just like, okay, I care about doing this character a little more now, but I felt like, you know, I finally believed that the choice for Katniss between Gale and Peeta is a complicated one for the first time. I mean, it's present through all of the books, but in the movies it's kind of glossed over in that there isn't really as much tension between it, and I thought that they did a good job of handling that, especially the way that... Jennifer Lawrence will be like with Gale but watching Peeta on the TV, and it's sort of like a complicated, awkward situation to be in, and I thought they did a good job of navigating that.
Yeah, I know that I liked his performance more than any of the other movies, because when I was watching it with my brother, I loudly scoffed at one part and I went and I said, Gale is such a punk bitch. My brother was like, what? And I was like, he's the worst. And he was like, he's not as bad in the books. And I was like, he's worse in the books. I'm not a fan of you.
I guess that shows where your brother stands on which type of suiting he prefers.
I just think that there's that one scene or whatever. Well, I mean the parallel scenes. I think it's in Catching Fire where Gale's like, "We should run away together," and Katniss is like, "No, I don't want to." And then like the 75th Hunger Games comes up where they're gonna do. Where she knows that she's going to be in it. And she's like, "We should run away together." And he's like, "Okay." And she's like, "Let's get PETA." And he's like, "What? No." Like, you're an ass.
It's funny because you phrased this whole thing much more even-handedly the first time we talked about it in Catching Fire.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think that the book treats it even-handedly. I think that people can make a decision about who they like more or less. That's my decision has been made clear.
Yeah, speaking about the acting, I thought Elizabeth Banks was a lot worse in this. I don't know. All the scenes with her, I felt like the emotion was stretching a lot. I really like her performance in Catching Fire. I think she does a good job of, you know, creating like a complicated emotion. It's not as super subtle or anything, but the idea that this is a person who is sort of struggling with the entire society that they've been raised in telling them one thing, but the emotion and caring about certain specific people like Katniss and PETA like pulling in the other direction, and that the sort of sadness about that was pretty palpable, and that she did a good job. But in this, the sort of like I don't know, everything about her kind of offhandedness and sarcasm, it feels very out of place for who the character is, and part of that's the point, but it's still like, I don't know, I just didn't think that Banks pulled it off as good as she had in the past.
I enjoyed she's the one that plays Essie.
Effie, whatever. Her Essie in the other
one. You guys
one.
Called her Essie in the last podcast.
I did. Who is Essie? That's another character from something.
I think
that
Essie
I know.
Is an actual name, whereas Effie is not.
No, Effie is like, Effie Briest is a pretty famous book from the like the 1800s or whatever.
What is it?
Early
90s. Yeah, didn't Fassbender make a movie out of it too?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
He remade it, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. But I thought I liked that she sort of reverted back to her kind of older emotions in this one, because it was already obvious that she had made that sacrifice of like moving away from the capital, and it was all there on the front, like her sacrifice. So she was sort of like burying that and being like, "Oh, I'm just gonna be, you know, my
that
old flippant self again."
Sacrifice, exactly. Her connection to Katniss meant that she had to get out of the capital.
I guess that's
yeah.
True,
she would basically just would have been murdered like Senna if she hadn't left. So
yeah,
it's not really a choice, but. I would say that it feels a little bit different just because previous to that, all of her emotional like sort of feelings are passive aggressive. Like it's all about facial expressions and just like feeling like seeming snotty but being polite. And then this, she's just like neither. She's making snide remarks while making snotty faces, and it's all very on the surface. And I think it would have been funnier if she had been pretending to sort of enjoy it, but like you can see in her face that she's really repulsed about being there. But that's just me.
I think that this movie definitely couldn't figure out what to do with neither her or Haymitch. I think that the scene which demonstrates this best is when Haymitch is writing down the reasons why anyone even liked Katniss in the first place, or the moments when they first remember liking her at all, and then so he's forced to be sober, right? And then so he's writing this, and then at some point I think Effie goes like, "Ooh, I like you when you're sober," and he gives her like a wink or whatever, and it's like, why do you even still have these characters here? Like, they have obviously like
I like when he erased the board though, and he's like, I hope you can save that.
Yeah, he's like, I hope that wasn't important.
That was funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just really didn't like that moment because I was like, what is this even? Like, is this supposed to like give me a happy feeling inside?
It did give me a happy feeling.
Like, at
inside.
At least those two are getting together.
It gave me a happy feeling though, because I kind of liked him showing up and being like. He's just like, all right, I'm gonna show you guys how this is done. He's like, that is how a revolution dies, or whatever. Like watching the video, and he's just like,
I shoot from the hip.
I like that those characters have sort of doubled down on their old selves because the landscape for the rest of the characters seems so uncharted at this point. So they're all kind of like floundering and trying to find their way through it. And these characters are just like, well, we're just gonna be our old reliable selves because that's what y'all need right now. And I liked that. It's like that thing that people do where they move to a new place and they sort of double down on, you know, what their identity was from their old place. So like people who, you know, are from the South who move to New York or whatever might have not had that pronounced a Southern accent before, but they'll just like, you know, they'll go full bore with it just because they're like, well, this is what makes me unique from everybody else.
I like that.
I'm going to go with it. And I that was kind of how I felt about those two characters. They were like, well, we've been living in the capital this whole time and now we're part of a revolution.
Hayden
Jackson,
but yeah.
You know. Yeah, he's still been living the high life though. He's been, you know, been living in the Victor's Village, which is
the PTSD version of the high life.
But I sort of am in the middle because I actually wrote down as a note that there's a lack of Haymitch in this movie, and I was actually wanting more of him because I actually sort of like where Woody Harrelson's performance has come. So I'm sort of in the middle. I would like more Haymitch and less Effie. But
definitely. I really liked him in the second movie too. I just thought that the movie couldn't really figure out what to do with him. And I think that one of the reasons it couldn't is because they left out his whole, like, you know, Genesis story, like the one where, I mean, his Hunger Games, them watching him
just Katniss
finish, like, kill and win in his Hunger Games. I think Katniss and Peter were watching it in the books.
Well, you've read it more recently than me, but
sure.
If I remember correctly, she couldn't sleep,
and
Haymitch didn't
want
to watch it.
It gives him. Well, I think in the books it was like she was expecting him to be angry, and then he wasn't. Like that was his reaction. And you see, like, you just get to see, like, all the stuff that made him who he is. And I figured that, like, okay, if this movie really wants to, like, take the next step with this character, they have to kind of talk about this. And instead, he's just like, well, he's the guy who kind of cheers Katniss up when she's down. And, like, he does his little clown routine and whatever. But otherwise, I usually don't like these kinds of, like, gambits or whatever, but, like, for the sake of Katniss's growth as a character, both he and Effie definitely should be gone. Because, like, they're just cocooning her in this hole and protecting her from actually, like, growing up in a way. Because they're, like, her foster parent figures in some way. Cinna was that earlier, so Lenny Kravitz's character. And now it's them. And I don't know if I like that. Because, in a way, I think this movie is dealing with how like she can't help herself, she can't defend herself against the Capitol taking advantage of her and now District 13 taking advantage of her, but like all those friends of hers are still around and they're not helping her in any reason in any
Prim
way
helps her.
Really, so in order for Prim helps her, I mean, but Prim is not, I mean, I don't count Prim as her friend, she's like, you know, I really am meaning like Effie, Haymitch, and I don't know, some other characters maybe, that just like are just hanging out there but are not protecting her in any way.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm with you there.
And
I feel like the point about Haymitch and Effie in that scene, which I kind of like, is that the reminder that Plutarch and President Coin and all the other rest of them have no idea who Katniss is as a person. and that they have no idea who anyone is as a person. All they can think about is, like, their war and not the individual people in it. And then Haymitch shows up, and he's like, what? Why do you like Katniss? Like, they don't even think about that before they start making the things. It's just like, why do people like Katniss? And then Effie knows why people like Katniss, because, you know, she likes Katniss. So, and I don't know, I thought that was nice.
I agree with you. I just thought that, like, in the end, they're just kind of using all that they know about Katniss in order to further, like, her manipulation by District 13.
Right.
So that's kind of sad in a way.
Well, I think that that's intentionally maybe sad. I mean, Haymitch is on the Revolution side.
Yeah.
He's been on it before she was. So, you know, it makes sense that he's sort of in favor of using her as a figurehead because he believes in what the Revolution is
doing.
Yeah,
he already used
them. He's just...
By not telling them about
yeah.
the plan in the Hunger Games, in the 75th, in the quarter call.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
Yeah, because at that point, he already knew, right? At that point, all of them were clued in on this plan.
Katniss and PETA.
And PETA, yeah.
Yeah, and PETA, right.
Even though she was only in it for a second, and I know
because
Basil doesn't like her, the second that Joanna was on screen, I still thought Jenna Malone was a really great actress. It's like, she's killing this one second.
Yeah, I was happy that she was back. I was like, yay! I also like...
If that was a bald cap, it was a very believable bald cap. Either, or she went like full method with it and really shaved her head, but I was like, well, this is a creepy looking shot.
I really liked Finnick's speech that he was giving. Is that all in the book, the one where he's like talking so that they could broadcast the signal and like jam the transmission or whatever?
Yeah, that's straight from
the
book.
The
full
speeches?
Thing, the full thing is in the book? Yeah, the
no,
one where
I know,
he's talking
I'm not
about...
asking you, I'm asking someone who's read the book.
yeah, that whole, I'm pretty sure that whole sequence goes down very similarly in the book, and that that definitely that whole part about him talking about
I remember that stuff is revealed, but I didn't remember it being part of a long speech that was like, you know, part of them broadcasting over something.
I'm pretty sure I remember that, but I guess we can all kind of speculate. Maybe
what I was asking is, are all of the parts that they cut out in the movie in the book? Because they'll cut off from him talking, and then they'll cut back, and he'll be talking about, you know, that, but he'll just have progressed a little more in his talking about it.
I don't that I can't tell you. It's been too long since I read it, but I mean, all the details that he reveals are definitely in the book, and I thought in a similar scene. I don't think if they are in a sort of speech thing, then I would guess that they are not cut off in that way, because the book is told entirely from Katniss's point of view, so it wouldn't really make sense for her to, like, stop paying attention to what he's saying and then continue, because it definitely is not playing out in, like, the multi-tiered kind of several things going on at once like it is in the in the movie. And I actually really, really like the way that scene is shot when they're, like, going through the like...
What is that place called? The Victor's Center or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was looking for. The like Victor's quarters.
Yeah.
Tribute
Center. Yeah, Tribute Center. Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
But I really, really like the way that is shot. And because it's been so long since I read the book, I couldn't remember exactly what happens in that. So I was like, holy shit, what's going to happen? And it was very intense for me. Also for Betsy, who rewatched all the movies with me and now likes them, having seen the first one, because she really hated the second one, having not seen the first one, and it was very confusing. So
that's good.
But now I like the details about Finnick's character being sort of like a gigolo, or just like being forced into that. I was like, oh wow, that's like a new wrinkle on his character, and I guess. A wrinkle on all the other Victor characters.
Yeah, that's definitely hinted at in 2. The movie a little bit, the book more explicitly. But when he's talking to Katniss, and he's like, you know, he's like, you could have a good career here in this city. if you wanted it, and you know, she's
and being paid in secrets.
Says being paid in secrets.
But it is much more explicit in this instance, and horrifying.
Yeah. Plus, in the book, he's like wearing nothing but like this little thing over his crotch. Like he's really completely, basically naked in the books, as are so many other people, which is really funny, because just picturing that in this movie would be really, really weird. Considering how Jennifer Lawrence reacted to Joanna's getting naked in the elevator, she would just be constantly just throwing shade at people.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's funny that you and Patrick both interpreted it that way, whereas I thought she was intimidated, like, sexually. Like, because Katniss is always trying to bury her sexuality, that she was like, I don't want to have to deal with this. This is terrifying.
I agree that that's maybe that is true for the books, but I feel like Jennifer Lawrence is a little like, that's where I think her and Katniss for me also are sort of separate, because Jennifer Lawrence is obviously like really cool with stuff as a person, and I don't think Katniss is as cool with stuff as she is, and I'm not always sure that Jennifer Lawrence makes this division between her and Katniss as clear as she maybe should be, because there's moments in the movies where I feel like, huh, that's the kind of joke that I would imagine Jennifer Lawrence would make, but maybe not Katniss.
Right.
Like, in the way she delivers it, or how, what she jokes about, I feel like Katniss is just not as, like, cool of a person. She's cool in her own way, but, like, she's not as, like, you know, with it.
Yeah.
Like, she's not cool about sex at all. At all.
I was going to say, going off stuff about how they change Katniss as a character, I was listening to the F This Movie podcast, like their end of the year podcast, talking about Hunger Games. It's like from a few years ago, obviously, and someone had it on their top 10, and the host was like, yeah, it's great. It's like a female character that, you know, young girls can actually look up to and, you know, model themselves after, as opposed to, like, Bella Swan, who's, you know, a terrible role model for children. And I was like, is Katniss a good role model? I don't think she is. She's kind of just, like, a sociopath. Like, she's an interesting character, but, like, you know, she mostly only cares about herself and her sister, and is willing to manipulate other people emotionally to ensure her own survival. Like, over the course of the series, I disagree with that. Like, she becomes more of, like, a three-dimensional person who cares about other people. But since they were just having the context of, you know, one movie, I'm like, she's not really a good person in that. Like, she's just, like, she's a product of her environment. And since I'm rereading the first book, it's even more so in the book. She's, like, pretty dislikable in the first book. Like, you know, I mean, and again, it's, like, understandable because she grew up in an environment where every piece of food you eat is important and you have to value every, you know, single thing, and that at a certain point you're going to start looking at the world in those terms, like, what is valuable to me to be able to live and what's extraneous that's going to get in the way of me getting more resources. So, like, I understand where her character is coming from, but it's also, like, the worst kind of thing to say, yeah, young girls, stop being this and start being this. They're,
I can't wait
at best, like,
for all the young girls to learn to hate their mothers when they're depressed, like Katniss does in the books. That she resents her for, like, not being there for her when she was a kid, like, pretty deeply for most of the books.
Yeah, it's really hardcore.
Yeah.
It's not in the movies really at all.
I mean, like, her not being, like, a role model character in a lot of ways, and her being, like, completely troubled, deeply sad, depressed, and just sociopath tendency having character is one of the reasons why I like the book. It's like, yeah, sure, that's what you would be.
Right.
That I totally, anything else, the fact actually that the book begins with her sort of hating Prim's cat actually is, like, that's what sold me on the book right from the beginning. It's like, oh yeah, I get where this is going. She's not, like, a she's not a really...
Yeah, one of the first things she says...
Older person.
Yeah, one of the first things she says is that she tried to drown it in a bucket.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And now she's, like, feeding the cat entrails from her hunting. And that's, like... And then she says the sentence, like, entrails, no hatred. That's as close as we will ever get to love. And I thought it was, yeah, this is cool. This sounds like... something I can imagine.
Apparently, like, Julianne Moore is 54 today. Happy birthday, Miss Moore.
Hooray. Yeah.
Jay Moore.
Celebrating a birthday today. Julianne Moore.
So the films of Julianne Moore will be the category for our first game.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I thought she was decent in it, although not as intimidating as I always imagined Coyne being. But she's not bad. Another actor that I normally don't like being tolerable in this series.
So, like Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yes. PSH would be the other one.
Yeah. I thought the scene where the bombs crash on top of District 13... And each time they do, he convulses in his chair, closes his eyes, shakes his head. That was like the one scene where he's like emoting at all, and otherwise he's like very low key.
Well, you're talking about this a little bit when you stepped away and just sort of saying that, you know, like,
oh,
my assumption is that his life circumstances really interfered with his ability to give his best performance in this film.
That's probably a good point. Even though I still felt like Plutarch was, as a character, like, he was portrayed really well. I mean, I did not read the third book yet, so I don't know the extent of his role, but the extent to which PSH plays his role, I felt like I really enjoyed the fact that he was not chewing scenery and not emoting as much as maybe he usually is.
I really like this is totally off topic, but I wanted to bring it up, is I really like the way that 13 is designed, the weird triangular infinite staircases. I thought were really creepy and like felt believable in terms of this is a military facility, and so it's very efficiently designed, but also, you know, that makes for an extremely uncomfortable place to live in.
Yeah. It's real spotting.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the underground science facility in the Resident Evil movies, which is also kind of shaped like an upside down cone, like going into the ground and like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good example. Mm-hmm.
Francis Lawrence borrowing from other video game fans like Paul Anderson. The only other style thing I wanted to bring up was that I thought that the return of the like shaky cam stuff felt really justified, and it made me wish even more that the first one didn't have it, so that there would be like this evolution of style from the first movie, like being kind of this controlled capital look at how the world is going, to now it's sort of like this guerrilla style District 13 view of the world, and that would make a nice stylistic through line that unfortunately doesn't exist thanks to Gary Ross, but
but Pleasantville exists.
I felt like when that happened,
What's that?
When that happened in the third...
I said Pleasantville exists because of Gary Ross, so you win some, you lose some.
It's true. I thought though that when the shaky cam occurred in this movie, the first time it started when Katniss was running and it was right behind her and she was about to shoot down the bomber, I felt like, well, this is like the camera guy running after her, right? That's why it's shaking, because the camera, they're trying to film her doing all this stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it has a sort of thematic or even like narrative purpose to it that it doesn't have in the first movie, and that I was like,
yeah,
this is cool, this is a reason to have this as opposed to the first movie.
Yeah,
where it's just,
I mean,
a weird choice.
The only reason that I mentioned that, actually, just to add to what you were saying, is that, like, yeah, in a way, yeah, that is like guerrilla filmmaking. At the same time, it's also like, oh, it's this kind of sort of like artificially implanted guerrilla filmmaking. Like, you're aware that this is being filmed for propagandistic purposes, which is not to say that it's wrong in that sense, just to acknowledge the fact that it is propagandistic, that's all. Because I think, as we've discussed in this podcast before, I think with, especially with regards to the Spanish Earth, propaganda is totally called for sometimes, and this is probably one of those times. But just like the fact that the movie kind of acknowledges that this is going on within it, that's the thing that I was, I think, just to sum up, I think was definitely most impressed by, I was most surprised by. I don't think the movies were giving off that much before the first and second one to ever make me think that the movie would be as self-aware about its own methods as it was in this installment. And that's what really made me like it a lot.
I also think it's kind of dark that she essentially just like completely destroys the hospital, because she shoots down the bomber and it just flies straight into the hospital. So it's basically,
no, the,
like,
the hospital's,
I mean,
already been bombed by the,
no,
I mean,
yeah,
they bombed it once, but it hadn't like completely collapsed at that point. And then she shoots the bomber down and it flies into it and it completely collapses at that point.
No, she
really?
She flies into like a pipe thing. I can understand the confusion and in that case, but having read the book, the implication is supposed to be that the bombers totally destroyed the hospital intentionally after Katniss was not in it, just to like be an asshole. But that the idea wasn't supposed to be that the bomber actually falls into it, because I don't know.
It
yeah.
It appeared very much that way on screen.
Yeah,
I
could understand the confusion, but not quite.
Because it, I mean, it's the same, it like bombs the building, and then it comes back around, and she shoots it, and it flies into the same building, and that building falls down.
It's not the same building.
It's,
I think it was a different,
no,
one,
it's
yeah,
the same building.
Anyway.
It is. It's definitely the same building that it bombs.
3-1.
I think we,
sorry,
should watch this movie together.
This is the dumbest thing.
Point out what it was doing there. It was made in 1987. I swear to God, 1987.
Wait,
is
what
it
are we talking
7
about?
Minutes or is it 11 minutes long? Version I watched was 11 minutes.
Wait,
oh, well,
I
watched,
I,
the same version as you.
Listen, I thought it was 15 minutes. I swear to God, I thought it was 15 minutes long.
It's,
I think our favorite argument, my favorite arguments on our podcast are always the fact-based arguments.
I'm sorry,
very,
Patrick,
like,
it's not the same building. It's
or
not
disproven.
Everything looks gray, and it's not very easy to tell what's going on in the geography. But Katniss is like, I don't know, maybe a quarter mile away from the hospital when she shoots it down. The building behind her is not the hospital. You can see,
well,
the bombs landing in the distance.
But then she runs up to the hospital and is standing
the
there, and the plane is the plane is sitting next to her when she's doing that like speech. Like, you can see the bomber laying there on the ground next to her while she's doing,
like,
that speech.
Like, if here's the hospital, she runs into a building this way, like when they're trying to get away from the hospital where the like stuff falls through, and so then she's like trying, she's like up here on this roof, and then there's a building here, and this is the building that's like perpendicular to the hospital that the plane runs into the giant pipe on.
Just the stuff podcasts were made for. Like, no, she runs up here.
Visual experience.
Right here.
Okay, well, the cinematic geography was not well established in that scene.
I agree.
At all.
I 100% agree with
that. I think you guys have all, well, I guess Ilya hasn't read it, but You and Basil have both read this, so you know that it's not the case. But
yeah.
What I saw on screen,
imagine the movie would have made a bigger deal out of it if it was Katniss who had brought upon the destruction of that hospital. Even
I mean, it seemed
just
consistent.
Another one of the cases where your inability
to
read holds you back, Patrick.
It seems consistent with, you know, the tone of the rest of the movie that they would just like gloss over that fact because they would be like, well, we can't have that. We'll just gloss
but
over
she
that.
She would feel conflicted
going.
About it. She would feel horrible. It
yeah.
would be very hard for her to be so
Maybe
indignant
the...
about how horrible the Capitol is if her accidental attack, like, murdered all those people. Like,
I agree that the others maybe wouldn't, but she definitely would. Like, she would feel remorse and she would, like, fall down and break down and cry and whatever it takes.
I don't know.
To acknowledge
I don't know
that.
If she would.
Well then,
I don't think she
well,
really cared about any of those
okay.
people.
Well, she's
she
like
she didn't care about the people in the hospital
at that point.
What?
No, that we've just
don't care
we've
about
just sat
hospital.
Here talking about how this character is kind of sociopathic in that way, and I mean
in the book, but
whoa, but like kind of.
Not
like
a heartless monster.
It's the same character. It's the same character. Is it totally out of the realm of possibility?
She's sociopathic
that she
in the way
care
that she
that?
Like cares very deeply about survival, and she's willing to use other people to further her own ends. She's not like the type of sociopathic where she watches 1,000 people die at her own hand and doesn't feel anything.
I'm not saying that they all died by her own hand. I'm just saying that the building fell down.
Yeah, she would feel something, even
it.
The one in the book.
I mean, just because she nearly drowned her cat doesn't make her like solid.
What?
She's not like
okay,
that
well,
level of sociopathic.
I you know the there's an issue there because the cinematic geography is not made clear, and I don't know.
We all agree on that point.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Sorry.
I'm just.
Didn't mean to
I just feel like your complete like dismissal of my confusion.
We weren't dismissing the confusion.
Is...
You said that it definitely was that thing, and that's what we were dismissing. Was that you were saying he definitely knocked the plane into the hospital? But if what you're saying is it looked like she
definitely...
knocked the plane into the hospital, I agree.
Yeah.
Sure. I also agree with that. I think the first time I watched it, I was also kind of questioning whether that happened. Although I kind of expected maybe the movie, okay, if it did happen, it would make like a bigger deal out of it. Because after all, this is like, you know, this girl who's fighting against all this manipulation. She's not there yet.
Yeah.
She's not the cynical, you know, manipulators of District 13 or the Capitol. She still like thinks that she's fighting for something that's kind of like has pure intentions or whatever. And for the movie that early to make her into this like cynical killer who doesn't care if that even happens, I think that would have just been a wrong turn. I think the movie would have acknowledged that in some bigger way. You know, that's all. Otherwise, I'm totally with you that it definitely looks that way. It just, for me, didn't make sense logic-wise with the rest of the movie. Huh. We agree? Could we agree on that, Patrick?
I'm confused as to why the bombers were still there if they'd already blown up the hospital. Like, why were they still... back for another pass?
You gotta make sure with something like that. You can't just...
It seemed unnecessary for them to still be there. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe that was the direction they came from.
Yeah, but why even shoot them? Why even risk going out to shoot them down at that point?
Why did Katniss
I don't think
do
she
it?
Knew that the hospital had been knocked down yet.
Yeah, she definitely didn't, because she doesn't realize it until she's on her way back and it's all on fire and stuff. But
right.
Yeah, that's why I'm still confused about the geography, though, is because that building that she goes to has the bomber sitting next to it, so it looks like it's the same building.
Well, I mean, there's multiple buildings. It's like a little square thing. I don't know. I just don't, like, I mean, for one thing, there's that giant smokestack attached to the building that the bomber crashes into, and I don't remember seeing the smokestack on the hospital. It's very, I agree that it's
I don't
not
remember,
super
like,
well laid out.
It, yeah, I mean, I don't remember, like, it seeing it very much from the outside anyway. So, you know, the problem I have is, I guess, like, it's not established architecturally which building
we'll
is which.
We'll never figure this out.
None of us are arguing that it's confusing.
So I have a big issue with that scene because I'm very confused about what's going on.
I'm sorry we ruined
you
it
should
for
drop
you.
Your rating to star and a half.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Well, I mean, it's not five stars. So...
Not anymore.
The movie has small issues.
I think that's a legitimate criticism with the movie's visual geography. Yeah.
It's a small issue.
I was actually confused about the geography too when they came out of the like hole after District 13 was bombed, and they were like, where they were going to film Katniss. And then at first I didn't get why she was like freaking out about the roses, and then she had to like explain like what it meant to the audience. So I had problems with that scene. I was like, wait, what's going on here? I don't know. I knew from the book that the hospital was bombed. So that made that scene less confusing for me.
Right. Well, I wasn't saying that it hadn't. Like, I assumed that they had already, like, killed everybody inside. But, like, it didn't... I don't know. It felt like she had contributed in some small way also to knocking it down, that was just kind of glossed over.
Well, she did in the sense that
they
died because she came there, but...
Yeah, and the thing was, it seemed like she was standing in the destruction that she had created herself, and they were, like, spinning that around. I don't know, that's what it felt like to me, because it was like, you know, like, you can see the bomber right there crashed on the ground. So you're like, she essentially created this destruction here. She's standing in her own destruction saying, look what the Capitol did. And
I just
you're
don't
like,
believe
you
that
did
she's
that.
That oblivious a person that she's that willing to.
I think at some point you could say that she's just kind of like blinded by emotion in the moment. Like, she's not going to be like, she's not going to differentiate. She's just like, they bombed a hospital. And she's not going to care, like, where she's standing exactly. But I'm saying they also are just like, yeah, we'll just gloss over that. Like, this is the hospital that got blown up. Don't show any bodies or anything. It's too gruesome. Just show her with the destruction behind her.
I think the movie isn't Starship Troopers-y enough to do kind of thing like that, to be honest. We haven't actually talked about the fact how, like, maybe you guys mentioned that briefly last time when we discussed the possibility of this being split into two parts, but, like, how, I mean, you like the, I think one of you mentioned that you liked the ending, was it Reuven or Patrick or Basil?
It was me.
Or, yeah.
I liked this ending.
You, everyone, I think I also liked the ending in a way, though I also felt like, I mean, I wouldn't have minded to watch another hour and a half of this movie, to be honest.
But
I
wouldn't mind
cared,
if this movie was 30
like,
minutes shorter, personally.
Sure.
I would have, but I don't know. This was the first time, even though maybe it wasn't all, maybe it felt stretched to you, this was the first time that I felt like any of the movies took their time enough for me to care about scenes. I feel like the first two still feel very much like, I don't know, trailers for the books. Better than the Harry Potter movies, but still the same sort of deal where it's like, we got this beat, then this beat, then this beat, and keep hitting these beats because we got to get all this stuff in. And this felt like it, you know, I don't know. I mean, if all the movies were 4 hours long, I'd probably be okay with that, but...
not a lot of people would, probably.
Yeah, but... But I'm okay with this being a four-hour movie split arbitrarily into two parts.
I like this movie a lot, but still, like, I think that some scenes could have been trimmed. Like, there was a scene where everyone, like, 13 is getting bombed, and there's this, everyone is getting evacuated into this bunker, and I think Prim runs out to get her cat, and Katniss runs after her. And that scene, like, the way it's shot, like, how this door is about to close, and they just make it in time. I felt like that scene could have also just not.
That's
been
word
there.
For word in
like,
the book, though.
Nothing to anything.
I like that scene. I thought the scene was really tense
book,
and exciting. I was like, oh my god, what's gonna happen?
Like,
I never.
Because they show the door so often, like they keep cutting to the door and then cutting to them running down. I'm like, Jesus, how often are you gonna make this point? And then I was really like, I was like, okay, you guys like made such a big deal out of this door closing. At least someone is gonna get like locked out, right? And then none of them do. I'm like, why the hell did this even happen? Like,
they
should have
had like a
no
Star Trek red shirt guy who's like locked out.
You see those scenes a lot, and they always kind of bother me from a logic perspective, because Katniss isn't going to do anything when she finds Prim to get her there faster. I mean, if, like, Prim was injured and she, like, picked her up and, like, carried her, that makes sense, but otherwise she just gets there and Prim is already running. Like, she could have just stood at the doorway and been like, Prim, it's closing!
But that scene would have made sense from a character perspective, because like Katniss doesn't care. Like as long as she can look after Prim, she doesn't care if she can even like, if as long as she's with her, that's like the most important thing to her. So I thought that like, oh, if they get locked out of there, then that just like, again, like for the first time, the movie would be making that point how Prim is more important to her
than herself,
anything
actually,
else and anybody else. And herself, like, even though she can't really help her. But that, in a way, would make some kind of sense. But then, it just, nothing, none of that ever, like, why is it there? It's just to make this, like, fake scare scene. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it worked. Maybe it just didn't work for me.
No, I'm with you.
No, I remember that scene not working in the book also. But that it was one of my few complaints about the third book, and I agree that it, for me at least, it's not not super effective, but
yeah, I mean, I still love this movie. I mean, like to love this movie. I think I'm really close
I'm still pretty high on this movie. Like, I you know, small complaints overall, I think it nailed the like emotions of everything that it was putting out there.
I agree.
It was a really long time ago, but I disagreed with Basil about Katniss's speech in front of the burning hospital, or near the burning hospital. I really liked it, and I liked how vulnerable she became at the end when she starts to like lose her voice, and like she's trying to be angry, but she can't totally pull it off because like she's so sort of broken. I like that moment. I was like clutching my seat, freaking out.
I think it's because she's not like a vocal angry person. She's like a quiet angry person, and so she's not used to like externalizing all of that anger. She's just like taking it in and just being like bottling it up inside of her.
She got pretty angry in PETA at the first one, and it seemed that I really like where PETA like reveals his secret love for her in front of millions of people, or however many people was the thing.
Oh, that's right.
And
she's
like,
that's where she
what
punches
the fuck
him in
are
the
you
face.
Doing? I love that scene in the book even more, but I like it in the movie.
I like the scene. I mean, I felt it was funny. It was funny when she was doing the when she tells the president about her demands for the first time, and the president's like, no. And then she starts getting angry, and then Philip Seymour Hoffman is like, there, that's what I mean, right there. And I'm like, I don't know, I didn't feel like that she even made such a big deal out of it, but I felt like one of the fun things about that was like, well, how much do like the people of Pan Am or like know about like good speeches? Like, what it takes to make, like, a good, awesome speech. Like, what do they see? They mostly see, like, people from the Capitol speaking. That's all they ever see. So, that's probably pretty cool. I mean, they're not, like, spoiled by, like, awesome actors on their TVs all the time. I thought, like, that's probably pretty impressive.
No Abraham Lincoln?
So that makes sense.
Up the Capitol?
They just have that really facile guy that Stanley Tucci plays.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, who is still awesome. In the movies.
He's still like one scene.
Something that's definitely way better in the movies than in the book, because you don't get that weird glossy Stanley Tucci smile while reading the book. just what I was saying earlier, that I think the line, "If we burn, you burn too," like, really hit me. I can't remember if that's in the book, but I was like, damn, that's some hard ass shit, Katniss.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is in the book, because that was definitely another moment in which, even though my memory of the book is sort of hazy, I was like, oh, I remember this scene hitting me really hard, and for some reason it's not doing it, and I was trying to figure that out why. But I'm glad it worked for other people.
Okay, does anyone have anything else to say?
All right.
Does anyone want to talk about the visual geography in the scene where...
I'm going to say the same thing I said last time, which is, I think we nailed it.
I agree with you.
The reason why that was so funny last time is that you said that, like, after we had spent 15 minutes not talking about the movie, you're like, we nailed this one.
We could talk about, you know,
John Carpenter playing video games.
I was going to say, we could talk about UAB shutting down their football program.
I like how
I
like how more people on my Facebook feed are angry about that than all the murdered black children by cops. None of them are particularly angry about that. But take away our football. Wow. You've trampled on our rights.
I have had about an equal...
Yeah, no, you and Quinn have been... Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of hate in your hearts.
And there's just a lot of hate in the real world flying around right now for me.
But there's a lot of people who have, like, been posting about that, like, nonstop, the UAB thing, and I'm like, I feel like, I mean, this sucks, but I feel like there are bigger things going on in the world right now.
My feeling is the opposite. I'm like, yeah, probably less teams should have, I mean, less schools should have sports teams. Maybe none of them, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, the main problem is that it's the decision that wasn't necessarily made within the UAB system, and... Or I guess that is to say it was made by people who aren't, like, necessarily the people that actually run UAB, but they're the people that run the University of Alabama system.
University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa, is the capital.
The capital is deciding to take away something
University
that,
of Alabama,
you know,
is like the
district,
and they can just take
like District
away
3 or something,
because
I guess.
They feel like
I don't
it's distracting from their own stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, we're going to take that away from you. You don't need that anymore.
Yeah, but that's part of what I liked about what Quinn had to say about it, is that he was like, this program died before its time, but all football program, college football programs are going to die and should.
Maybe. The problem is if they decide to just kill off more stuff in the name of, you know, it's not making money. Like, has that ever stopped a school from not having something?
Schools make so much money, I don't even understand how they can say anything is not making money. UAB is building like 3 buildings concurrently right now.
I know, and we don't have enough money to continue a football program. It's I'm just waiting for them to, like, you know, cancel the undergrad program, and then people will be like, "Oh, well, maybe we should have stopped them when the first domino fell."
I don't know. I mean, the amount of schools that cut way, way back on funding for arts things without anywhere near the uprising about it, it's hard for me to feel sympathetic about something like football that I don't care about at all. I think lots of schools cut a lot of stuff all the time because it doesn't make money, and it doesn't get anywhere near the media attention.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that those sorts of things got media attention, but the problem is that this is so public, and they have just, like, completely dismissed all of the protest against it, that you know, since this is something that's so big and public that people care about, like, where is there going to be any, you know, where near the pushback for something as small as, like, the arts programs or any of the other programs? Like, they can just, like, you know, just sweep that under the rug compared to this, and they can just cut...
Just real quickly, guys, because I gotta go. Are we still recording? We are still recording, yeah. Right?
Yeah, we should probably...
Okay, I mean, we can cut it.
I mean, you guys just, like, keep on talking. I just have to go, right. Like, now, so...
Sorry to drag you into local matters.
I mean, oh,
no
yeah.
No problem. You,
we really
you guys
this
totally
one now.
Put on another, another half an hour of football talk on the end of this. I think that's totally gonna be cool. I'm gonna listen to it. Alright.
Alright.
So...
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Take us out, Ruben.
Yeah.
And may the odds be ever in your favor.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it, especially the last 30 minutes or so. If you did, give us 5 stars on iTunes, though. I would be surprised if, based on this podcast, you did that. All right. See you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.